Test, test.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to call the Tuesday, May 18th, 2021 regular school board meeting to order. Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Abram?
Here.
Mr. Barga?
Present.
Mrs. Questenberry?
Here.
Mr. Whitman?
Here.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Here. Could we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Moving on to item 2.01, approval of the 2021 regular school board meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Abram. Any changes, discussion, deletions? All right, seeing none, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion passes. All right, moving on to 2.02, approval of the April 14th special board meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Questenberry. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Abram. Again, any questions or deletions, additions? Okay, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion passes. All right, it was a busy month, finally. 2.03, approval of the April 24th special board meeting. I'm sorry, not the special board meeting, but the minutes. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Questenberry, second by, oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Abram. And I was looking right at you, too. Second by Mr. Whitman. And again, any changes, additions, deletions? All right, seeing none, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving on to 3.01, approval of tonight's board agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Questenberry. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Abram. Superintendent Brown, any changes, deletions, additions?
Only small tweaks to the HR section, the personnel section, excuse me.
Okay, great. All right, any questions? All right, seeing none, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving down to item 4.01, board members may speak on different topics at this time. Ms. Questenberry, start down there with you.
Thank you. Just welcome to everyone, and I hope that you all have registered on the Vax-a-Million. I plan on winning a million, so hopefully that comes in the next couple weeks. If you haven't got your shot, make sure you get it so you can get into that. And I think that's all I had. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Questenberry. Are you going to share any of that when you win?
I might.
Might invite us over for a cookout? All right. Mr. Whitman.
Well, I know we have a busy night here tonight, so I don't have too much, but to add on to Board Member Questenberry's comments about the Vax-a-Million, I saw a cartoon recently, and it was like, you know, bogus children's book titles. And one was called The Variant and the Vax, and shows this anthropomorphic vaccination needle taking its ease, leaning against a rock, you know, in the sun, while this path runs by it with a sign pointing towards the finish line. And huffing and puffing slowly but surely along the path is a virus variant. So. So that's the kind of thing I nervously keep in mind. So everyone, please, just, you know, do like you're doing out there. You know, don't count on the vaccination to solve everything. It's still going to take the social distancing and other you know, hygiene and safety measures. That won't hurt either. Yes, and so I appreciate the you know, the invitation to come over when you've got your million. You know. But. Yeah, things slowly getting back to, you know, some kind of normal. There was a prom last weekend, and Dr. Cosgrave let us know that big thanks are due to Joseph Sorensen and another teacher whose name was unfamiliar to me, and I Chelsea, I think. but in any case, yes, I should have looked that up. Big thank you to them to pulling it all together. And judging from what I'm seeing, you know, the social media pictures, looks like it was a good time. And graduation coming together with mask restrictions, or with some of these restrictions being lifted. I know we're going to have to, you know, maybe make some adjustments to what we do. But I know that Mr. Superintendent and the rest of his team will work to make it, you know, as safe and normal-like as possible. But also a little bit of normality. I was invited out to the Summit Elementary School field day today. I learned today that there was such a thing as a four-way tug-of-war rope, a brass ring with, you know, four ropes coming off of, you know, off of it, and so this way, four teams can tug at it, and it also allows for a little bit more social distance too. You couldn't always preserve that, of course, in a tug of war, but with enough vaccinations and other things going on, hopefully that, you know, the risk was worth the reward. And the kids were actually pretty well compliant about their masks. I did see a few masks being worn as chin slings, but it's comparable to what I see, you know, in the grocery store. I think a couple of other board members may have been there, but it might have just been my imagination. But we'll see. But anyway, that's that's all I have for now.
Was that the heat maybe getting to your head, your imagination? Yeah,
could be.
Ms. Abram.
Good evening. Hey, the school year is almost over. What a year it has been. Sometimes I like to reflect and see what has impacted me the most. First of all, it's been a year of tremendous loss, both personally and nationally. While those COVID cases are declining, they are still occurring, and we still need to maintain our due diligence with combating this. Many have been vaccinated, and this is contributing greatly to the falling numbers. I am encouraged that we will have an in-person graduation with family members in attendance, and I am hopeful for 5 days a week in-person school for the fall. I've been reading on social media some of the opinions of some people who are speaking poorly of the district, and while we may not be perfect, we strive for and continue to strive for excellence, and we remain committed to that. We have 8 graduating seniors who will not only receive their high school diplomas in a few weeks, they will also receive their associate's degrees. I say that to express congratulations to these students as well as all the graduating class of 2021. Know that I speak highly of you and the district from which you are graduating. I've been very busy with district business since our last regular board meeting. We have had several special board meetings, a board retreat, and I've been out and about in the community also. This afternoon, I had the opportunity to go over to Summit Elementary and scoop some snow cones for the field day. So thank you for inviting me. I truly enjoyed the opportunity. And over the weekend, I attended the commemoration for National Missing Children's Day with the Reynoldsburg Youth Human Trafficking Coalition, the BCI and the FBI and the Reynoldsburg Police Department. Tyshayla Kenny presented on her experiences as an exploited child. Her journey began at 12. Human trafficking is a crime and a public safety issue. We as a community should continue to be alert and vigilant in the fight against human trafficking. I also had the opportunity to attend an REA board meeting. It was my first opportunity to formally interact with them since COVID because, you know, we've been kind of busy. I gained insights from their perspectives about what we are doing well and where we can continue to improve. I look forward to more dialogue. Thank you, REA, for extending the invitation to me. In closing, I'd like to thank the community for your support of me. I will be out and about in the community this summer. Please reach out to me, share your concerns, your accolades, and your vision. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Barga.
Parents, you did it. We are, as Dr. Brown reminded me as we were walking in, 7 effective school days away from graduation. You guys have made it through something extremely unprecedented. And I'm talking to you instead of your students right now because there's going to be a lot of talk about the students over the next few days. We have an entire ceremony for them. But I often think that parents are forgotten in this and some of the struggles that you do behind the scenes. The way that you ensure that your different events are done, the way that you ensure that your kids are taken care of, that their social and emotional development was not stymied during this pandemic. Congratulations, you have done an impossible task. Most of you have done it great. Those of you who haven't have done it very well. There's no real failure when it comes to something like this. Likewise to the entire team, as we start to reach towards the end of this and we start to discuss whether we're going to even have masks next year or not, well done. Very well done. The overall dynamic here is something that is very foreign to me. I don't like building things as we go. I think I've said that numerous times throughout the years on this board, and it's one of my bigger concerns. I like to plan before we go. But when you have something like a pandemic, when you have something like any sort of emergency, which there are surprisingly large numbers of those in the school district, For example, a French teacher disappearing in the middle of the year. That's an emergency for every single one of those students. And the scramble to fix that is also. When you have those problems, you don't have a choice. You build as you go. And the reality is we've done an extremely good job. We are orders of magnitude less in our staff and our students in terms of infection from the beginning of this to the end of this. The exact details I don't believe can be shared, but if they ever can be shared, please share them. But we are doing astronomically well comparatively. If you look at our area and a lot of the students that we service, we are in one of the worst zip codes for the state in terms of impact. We didn't feel it. Part of that is because we took a long time to get back into school. Part of that is because we constantly were restructuring how we were going to do it to find the best way. But the reality is once we got them back into school, we still maintained those numbers for the most part. Because our students did a great job, as Mr. Whitman pointed out, there were the occasional chin slings. But other than that, and that's just like everyone else, it has been a phenomenal success. Teachers have done a wonderful job with the shifting during the different dynamics. We've asked you to use tools that you have never thought of using before. We've asked you to teach in ways that probably disagreed with your pedagogical approach. You found a way, you did it. That's the grand extent of what I want to say today. Congratulations to all of you, to the students who I did not mention. For the next several days, take your accolades, you deserve them as well. And remember, this will not define you, but this is going to set your course. You're going to be able to remember this as the strongest character building you have. You have overcome this. What else is in front of you?
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Well said. Want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. We're starting to see an increasing crowd here, and thank you for everyone who might be viewing at home. I hope everyone's enjoying the weather. I know it's difficult sometimes to be indoors when it's so gorgeous out, but I thank you all for attending. I did also spend the morning at Summit Road Elementary, and again, I always say that's the shot in the arm for me, is to be out amongst the kids and as a school board member, and it was wonderful. I manned the bouncy slide from the top, and I had to be on the top, kind of switch back and forth and let everyone know which side they should go down. Don't go on their stomachs, don't bounce. I felt kind of mean, but I tried to make it really fun. So much fun that I took a ride down myself as well, of course. So I want to thank Summit Elementary for inviting me out. I was able to hand out some snow cones at the end as some of the virtual students came in because they were part of Fun Day as well. Came in and got some snow cones and t-shirts and some bubble gum and lots of waves and smiles from their teachers. I understand prom was a huge success. Yes, thanks to Joe Sorensen and Chelsea Coleman. So kudos to both of them. Thank you, Superintendent Brown. Wonderful, saw lots of great pictures, saw lots of fun, and I think it was safe event as well. So I appreciate all their hard work. And there's also a redo for those who missed last year. It's not a district event, but I posted that out on my Facebook site. I'm just so happy that everyone can kind of capture these memories as best they can as we begin to shift back into some type of normal. The end of the year is very exciting. Congratulations to all of our graduates. I don't think I can say it any better than Mr. Barga did. This has really, really been a difficult year and a half, and I know that firsthand. I do have a college graduate, but also having a high schooler myself. I'm excited to get out to the football field once again, and it was a beautiful setting last year. We'll all hope for a little bit of good weather as well. It was a beautiful backdrop to these wonderful graduates and all their accomplishments in such a difficult year and a half. Also, the end of the year means with that we are losing some staff, and I've had some different people who have commented to me about the number of administrators that we are losing. And, you may see some Facebook posts or you may talk to them personally, and they're going on to further their careers and further their goals, and I wish them the best of luck and all the success. Isn't that wonderful that we have been a ground in a facility and a climate and a culture where we can help mold people to go on to do great things. I want to say thank you to all our staff who made, again, the most out of a very, very difficult year. I want to thank you for your strength, your tenacity, your grace, your ingenuity, and amazing love for our children. Just being there, listening, checking on them, giving them that smile when they get onto the bus in the morning, greeting them when they come through the lunch line. It means the world, and truly I speak from the heart when I say that, and that is a deep felt thank you. My daughter's on Encore, and that has meant the world as she has returned. I also just wanted to mention that I finished the book Cast by Isabel Wilkerson, and it was an amazing read. It talks a lot about class versus caste. And this has been a part of a challenge that I have given myself. I don't consider myself a racist. I don't consider myself biased. But once you do a little bit more reading and understanding, it expands your horizons. And it makes you think a little bit deeper about some of my own actions. It gives me a little bit of understanding about how we got here. And I'd actually like to just read a short excerpt, if I could. It was sort of from the end of the book. And I know that a lot of our teachers in schools did a study of that, Superintendent Brown, right? I thought I heard a lot of teachers reading this. And just a short excerpt. When an accident of birth aligns with what is most valued in a given caste system, whether being able-bodied, male, white, or other traits in which we had no say, it gives that lottery winner a moral duty to develop empathy for those who must endure the indignities they themselves have been spared. It calls for radical kind of empathy. Empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy is looking across at someone and feeling sorrow, often in times of loss. Empathy is not pity. Pity is looking down from above and feeling a distant sadness for another in their misfortune. Empathy is commonly viewed as putting yourself in someone else's shoes and imagining how you would feel. That could be seen as a start, but that is little more than role-playing, and it is not enough in the ruptured world we live in. Radical empathy, on the other hand, means putting in the work to educate oneself and to listen with a humble heart to understand another's experience from their perspective, not as we imagine we would feel. Radical empathy is not about you and what you think you would do in a situation you have never been in and perhaps never will. It is the kindred connection from a place of deep knowing that opens your spirit to the pain of another as they perceive it. I challenge everyone who might be viewing or listening tonight. I know summer is time for some light reading, but I challenge you to challenge yourself to get into maybe some more heavy reading. Caste, White Fragility, there are a number of books that I know our teachers and our staff have been looking at, and I've been trying to read as well as I try to better myself so that I can be an agent of change. I would like to remind everyone about the Mulligan Golf Classic, which is an event June 8th through the 11th, which we actually got switched this year so more staff could be involved. It benefits the Education Foundation and also HART. And that's going to be out at Cumberland for a whole week, lots of fun. Hopefully we'll get some great weather. I also want to ask everyone to mark their calendars for the first annual gala that will be sponsored by the Reynoldsburg Education Foundation, and that is on September 30th. Have a wonderful end of the year, everyone, and enjoy summer. Thank you. That's it for me. All right, moving on to item 4.02, committee reports. First off is the Finance Committee, and that was Mr. Barga and myself. And my committee report, I said I would give this. There it is. And it's actually going to be quite short because everything that we discussed is going to be talked about a little bit more in length at different parts of this meeting. So we began by receiving the five-year forecast presentation from Assistant Treasurer Tricia Heater, who did a great job. Treasurer Miller is going to be giving that to us a little bit later on tonight, so I am not going to get into any details. Then we talked also about the bond levy. Mr. Reed, our Executive Director of Business, gave us a little bit of an update about the calculation. We're realizing that construction and material costs may not be coming back down in the near future, and we want to plan accordingly. So we discussed some different ways to structure our financing in the hopes of some of this planning that we've been talking about with a couple of new builds as we grow as a community. You'll also see a resolution on tonight with a dollar amount not to exceed, and we talked about that, and Tammy will again talk a little bit more about that as we get to that part of our agenda for this evening. And that was about it. Mr. Barger, did I miss anything?
No, Madam President.
All right, so sounds good. So I am going to move on to the Legislative Liaison Report. And Ms. Abram, I think you might have a report for us tonight.
Vice President Whitman and I have been working on drafting a letter. Pardon me?
Is your mic on?
Yes.
Okay.
We've been working on crafting a letter for to go to our senators and our state reps with regards to the backpack bill. The backpack bill is a bill that is, I feel like, contrasting the House Bill 1, which is the Fair School Funding Plan. And the backpack bill basically implies that the money you put in the kid's backpack and it follows that kid. And that way, if they choose to leave the public school system, that money follows them wherever they go, and they get a voucher for it. So obviously, as a school district, we are in opposition of that. So I don't know if board.
I would like, yeah, actually, I would like to back up that you and I collaborated a little bit a couple of weeks earlier than that, too, on the Fair School Funding Act, where it is right now. It was House Bill 110, which passed, and that's over at the Senate now, and it's under discussion by the Senate Finance Committee. And a couple of weeks ago, Board Member Abram and I divvied up a list of people, of senators that we wanted to contact, just reminding them of our board's support of this, including passing a resolution to that effect back in November or December. So we contacted every senator that represents the Reynoldsburg district. So that would be Senator Maharath and Senator out in Newark. the names. He was on the Mayor Joe show. The licking guy, he's been around for...
Hottinger.
Jay Hottinger, yes, okay. And Senator Schaefer, and one other senator, I think, as well as the committee chair and the Senate
Brenner.
President. And in fact, Senator Dolan even called me back because some of the voicemail message got garbled up a little bit, so I just reminded them and they wanted to add that, this is a Reynoldsburg school district. And then while I had them on the line, I said, here's a heads up for something brewing over on the House side right now, and that is House Bill 290, the so-called backpack bill that we were working, we've been working on this week. So, but anyway, turning back to that, did you want to summarize some more of that? I have the draft that we're working on if we want to read any of that or anything.
No, feel free to elaborate.
Okay, so this is a draft that we're planning on just sending tomorrow, each of us again sort of divvying up the list of people to receive it. However, if any other board members would like us to add their name to it, just let us know and we can do that. But after the introductory material, let me scroll back up here. Okay, so the first section. Schools are not pizzas. The basic rationale is that state money for education needs to be tied closely to each student, and now that the Fair School Funding Plan has arrived at a more realistic and evidence-based average cost of educating a single student, that amount of dollars should accompany each student like the student's backpack, as you were saying, Member Abram, to wherever they get their education. However, the cost of running a school is not the same as the number of students multiplied by that average per student cost. A school isn't like a pizza that roommates buy with their pooled money. There are certain costs such as infrastructure and even teachers that don't decrease when some portion of students leave the school. This isn't a revolutionary concept, it's the basic economic idea of economies of scale. And even if there were enough money to fully fund two school systems statewide, it would be wasteful and duplicative to do so. We agree that parents have the right to send their children to non-public schools. However, we dispute that it is the job of the government to pay for it. The Ohio Constitution calls for the state to provide a, and I have some placeholder language here because Board Member Barga, I can't remember those two adjectives that always come up in discussions of the Ohio Constitution and school funding. You have a quick reminder of those two adjectives. It's not safe and effective, but what is it? Fair and efficient? Okay, yeah. Anyway, and the best way to do that is to go all in on the state's system of schools, doing whatever it takes to get them right. When we take money away from the public schools and send it elsewhere, we hurt ourselves. It amounts to giving up on ourselves. And it reminds me of a symptom of some kind of mental, psychological disorder, of believing one of your own limbs doesn't belong to you, and people doing grievous harm to themselves by trying to remove it. If we spent half as much time and energy making sure our public schools had the resources they need as has been spent trying to find ways to divert those resources elsewhere, our schools would be the best in the nation. In any case, the Fair School Funding Plan, the funds already follow the student, namely by remaining in the student's district. The Fair School Funding Plan addresses all the needs of the diverse student population that our district, along with many other Ohio districts, have. If one district needs more funds for a larger population of economically disadvantaged students, and another needs more funds for buses and transportation because it has more miles and routes, then this Fair School Funding Plan accommodates these needs. All districts are not the same and should not be put into the one-size-fits-all, one-backpack-fits-all students dilemma. Next section, non-public schools lack accountability. Representatives John and McLean, the sponsors of the bill, raised the issue of a supposed lack of accountability in public schools. This argument is doubly flawed. First, there's no reason to believe that non-public schools are any more accountable than public schools. Supporters argue that non-public schools have to meet all the standards that public schools do, but as has frequently been pointed out, there's a big difference. Non-public schools can pick and choose the students they want to accept, whereas public schools are legally and morally bound to educate all students residing in their districts. We gladly accept that charge because the main purpose of American public school design was to provide for the fullest development of each learner for living morally, creatively, and productively in a democratic society, to make education universally available to all children free of charge. That means that, like health insurance companies complying with the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, we can't exclude people with pre-existing conditions such as poverty, disabilities, or health problems. And when the more fortunate students move to private schools, the public schools have to work ever harder to avoid the kind of death spiral we heard about for insurers covering high-risk pools. However, even with the advantage of being able to exclude certain students, non-public schools have still shown themselves to be shockingly unaccountable. With hundreds of thousands of dollars misspent or unaccounted for in charter schools, and stories of various charter schools shutting down suddenly, completely, and unexpectedly over the course of a weekend, leaving students and their teachers in the lurch. Public schools, accountability, and boards of education. Second, the second flaw in the argument is that public schools are accountable by way of their local school boards. To use two examples that I mentioned by Representatives McLean and John, let's talk about harmful political agendas and the COVID-19 pandemic. Laying aside the question of exactly which harmful political agendas public schools are said to be promoting, we note that if schools are doing this, it's because their superintendent allows it. If the superintendent allows it, it's because the school board allows it. If parents in a district object to the policies their local school board governed by, whether it's promoting harmful political agendas or anything else, they have the right to vote those board members out. Measures that put this decision at the level of individual families in the name of freedom of choice undermine the freedom of choice of the rest of the voters in a school district. And on to COVID-19, the false narrative. Representatives John and McLean criticized districts that, quote, refused to open full-time to students despite the evidence that in-person education was safe. This is a false narrative. As a school board, we lived through and continue to navigate our way through this pandemic, trying to make the safest decisions we can with the best information we can get in real time. So do other school boards. Week by week, we struggle to find the right balance. On the one hand, there were the dangers to the physical health of students, teachers, and their families if we kept them in the school buildings. On the other hand, there were the emotional and psychological dangers to the kids and their families if they stayed out. As the pandemic wore on, later data did indeed suggest that children were less likely to have symptoms of COVID-19. But would you want your school board betting your child's health or life on that? Furthermore, other data suggested that although children were less likely to develop symptoms, they could still spread the virus asymptomatically, a fact that only gradually came to light. In fact, to imply that the schools that remained open served their stakeholders better is highly debatable, because the spread of COVID-19 among the faculty was often accelerated by staying in person. As a person who works in schools on a daily basis, I, meaning Board Member Abram, know firsthand there were rolling closures due to COVID-19 in some of the charter schools and schools of choice. Needless suffering was experienced by many of my colleagues due to the in-person format. The emotional toll on the teachers in this format is something that will take years for them to recover. You will see retirements and resignations en masse due to the stress and burnout of this year. A final irony of the COVID-19 argument is that it advocates for public schools to fully reopen, yet simultaneously advocates for removing funding from those public schools. You cannot have it both ways. And finally, a lesson we can take from COVID-19. If this pandemic has taught us nothing else, it has shown us that one size, one plan does not fit everyone, and we would benefit from the customization that the Fair School Funding Plan offers. In contrast, this backpack bill takes away from funding for our public schools, and less funding means less teachers, less programs, and less resources. Is that really what you, as sponsors or co-sponsors of the bill, truly want? Do you want to provide fewer teachers and fewer programs and less resources for our most precious commodity, our children? The Fair School Funding Plan was created over 3 years with thousands of hours of work and dollars spent from education, financial, and legislative professionals. It would be heartbreaking if, after generations of inequitable and unconstitutional funding of Ohio schools, followed by a near miraculous coming together of a plan, we ended up with a funding system even worse than it was before. That's pretty long. It could probably do with some editing. So we welcome suggestions, but we're going to try to get this out this week. And that's all we have for our report.
Thank you very much. Very thorough. Definitely very thorough. I think I would be a little conscious of the length so that it is read in full. But you have some amazing points in there, and so I appreciate it. And, you know, in some of your summarization, I almost wanted to reply rhetorically, because I feel that there is, and I don't even want to say an undercurrent, because that's sort of an understatement, that there is a move to privatize education. And this is one way to make it more difficult for public education to be successful. And there's the aha, you know, you can't make it successful. All those points are well taken, and I appreciate also the personal contact that the two of you are making. I think that's very important, too. We often send letters, and that's wonderful, but to take the time to make those calls and those personal contacts is great. So, Mr. Barga, I think you found the two words we were looking for.
I was actually wrong with my first guess. I do apologize. It is thorough and efficient. I had the wrong first word. And while I was doing that, I actually found an interesting case, Miller v. Corns, which is the first case in Ohio to define those, apparently, and is the basis of DeRolf, which, of course, further defines them, which is where currently the case law is. But they define thorough as one in which part or any number of the school districts of the state were starved for funds. And they define efficient as one in which part or any number of the school districts in the state lacked teachers, buildings, or equipment.
The opposite of those words.
Well, as I explained to you the other day, Neil, statutory construction and plain English construction do not always go the same way. And if you add jurisprudential parts into that and the court's interpretation, you're in for a whole hodgepodge.
Well, thank you for looking that up, Mr. Barga. So, all right. Moving on to item 5.01, Superintendent may speak on different topics at this time. The floor is yours, Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Madam President. It has been quite a year, a long, arduous, exhausting year, and we're thankful that we're almost at the end of it and anxious to restart in August the way we typically know what school looks like. We're anxious for some sense of normalcy. We don't exactly know what normalcy will look like, but it won't look the way it currently does. I'm pretty certain of that. So we're excited about those possibilities coming up. But it's important for me to say to everyone a thanks to our staff, our parents, our Board of Education members, our community members. Your cooperation and your patience and your understanding through this process brought us to where we are. We would not have been able to be at this point without you. So I'm very, very thankful for those efforts to make sure we were able to do school in the most safe fashion as possible. It has indeed been a year. I was talking to Mr. Barger on the way in, and I mentioned that this has been the toughest year in my entire career. And that's not an overstatement. There's no question about that. But I'm thankful for where we are and looking forward to graduation and seeing our kids in person. As we prepare for summer activities, we shift a little bit. We have some things coming up during the summer. Not your typical summer school sort of situation. We are trying to do some things to enrich our students' experience, to learn from the things that they've learned, to capitalize on the things that they've learned over the past year, and do some fun and engaging activities along with some academic work. So we're looking forward to that. We're not certain what that will look like from a masking standpoint. We'll be meeting later this week to discuss what that possibility might be. And then finally, as mentioned by Mrs. Dunlap earlier, we have a number of administrators who are moving on to other opportunities, and we're thoroughly excited for them to be moving into opportunities where they're moving their careers forward. They're not moving in lateral positions. They are moving forward in promotional opportunities. So we're extremely proud of that and want to wish them their absolute best as they travel off into those new adventures in the next few weeks. That's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, moving on to item 6.01, visitors that request to address the board may do so at this time. I think we only have one speaker slip, is that right, Madam Treasurer?
Yes, one person added to the agenda.
Okay, so Asia Phillips, come on down. And welcome, you can just address us from the microphone there. You might have to pull the mic down a little bit so that people not in here can hear as well, too. If you could state your name and your address for the record, that would be great.
My name's Asia Phillips. My address is 1530 Half Drive. Do I speak about it now?
I'm sorry?
Would you like
then to? Go ahead. Okay, then you can address us on the issue that you wanted to come talk to us about.
So my name's Asia Phillips. Good evening, first. I'm an eighth grade student at Baldwin Junior High, and basically what I wanted to talk about is, so recently we were given a benchmark, and it was given to us very randomly. I was told that they gave us warning about it, but personally I did not hear about it. And this, I'm not trying to say that we're getting rid of benchmarks completely. My point is to say that I believe that students should be more kept in the loop of things, because usually, like with benchmarks, in my past experience, they are like either given a day in advance, like told a day in advance, or like on the spot in personal experience. So I personally like to study before a benchmark so I can do my best. And I'm not trying to complain, I'm just saying I have a concern saying I feel like students should be kept in the loop and things. And I've personally with the benchmark, it like freaked me out a little because like the last few weeks of school was usually like where students have finals for like enriched classes and also like missing work. And usually when you think of missing work, it's like students slacking, but that's not always the case because, you know, students also have sometimes family issues and that like distracts them, and also like personal issues, and that like it's really hard to motivate themselves to do that work. And it's not always that they're trying to be lazy and they want to achieve. It's just like it's really hard on them, and that's just a personal thing. But also I think keeping students in the loop about like what's going on, like if we're having testing or like stuff like that, and how it could help. It could also help with time management, and so I think that would help positively affect students.
And I'm sorry, so what school, you're at Baldwin, did you say?
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
And what grade?
Eighth grade,
yes. I agree 100% that sometimes it's very difficult on students when they miss assignments. I can speak from experience as well that it isn't always laziness, you're right. And so we try to support our students as much as possible, and we should, because we want them to succeed, and sometimes life gets in the way, doesn't it? So, all right. Thank you for your perspective. I appreciate it. Mr. Barga?
Ms. Phillips, I'd like to make a suggestion. Since you were talking about some of your concerns here with your scheduling, you know your peers better than we would. You know how you get your schedule, you know what you guys look at. Draft an idea. Take your problem, see if you can come up with a solution with your friends, and give it over to your principal. See if you can make the change that way.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. I actually have a question, and it can be either for you or for Mr. Superintendent, whoever can kind of clarify. I'm kind of unfamiliar with the procedure about benchmarks you're describing. To me, benchmarks are just these kind of abstract standards that people have to meet. Mr. Superintendent, can you tell me a little bit about
that? That would be accurate, although it wouldn't be prudent to comment on what this one looked like because I have no context.
Okay. Ms. Phillips, can you tell a little bit more about what the general procedure is that you're talking about, like when someone, you know, a teacher assigns a benchmark and then a week later you take a test on it? I don't know much about that.
Do you mind if I give like a little bit of background of like, so?
Well, I'm not so sure we want to get into, you know, this particular situation, because I think you were trying to keep it very positive and say, you know, these are some of the things that myself and my students are looking for. And I appreciate that perspective, and that's something definitely that, you know, is good for us to hear. I'm not so sure we want
okay,
to go
yeah,
into
that. Yeah, that's fine. I didn't mean to put.
I can keep it short if you like. I won't go like on a tangent. I can like shortly explain if that's okay.
That's okay. I think that your message that you gave to us was very, very clear. I think benchmarks, you know, again, are things that we need to get done and achieve by the end of the year. And so I appreciate your perspective. And your voice for you and the rest of your students. It sounds like that you have followed the chain of command and you've taken that to your principal and talked, and you wanted to make us aware as well. And I like Mr. Barga's suggestion too about being a change agent. You know, we're trying to empower our students to be leaders, and I think this is a great opportunity too. So I appreciate you, you know, talking to us tonight.
And it sounds like I could use just a bit of education, perhaps in the next board packet from you or Dr. Cosgrave on someone on the procedure that Ms. Phillips is kind of talking about. You know. Thank you.
And Aja, thank you so much, because it's not easy to stand up in front of all these adults and give your viewpoint. That takes a lot of courage. So good job and well spoken.
Thank you. I'm a 3-year choir student, so like it's not. It's definitely, since of COVID, of course, it's been a while since I've, like, stood in front of, like, a crowd or, like, authority, if you will. But, you know, I've done it before, and I think I'm I know how to handle myself. Not
I
saying
think
that,
you've
like,
got
in
a
the
future.
Most way. I don't want
future
I
there in speaking. Good job.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Good job.
Thank you.
You can go ahead and you can stay for the rest of the meeting if you'd like. And you can see we like to talk a lot, so. Or you can go ahead and head on home. Thanks for coming. Thank you very much. All right, moving on to item 7.01. We have quite a number of items that are up for action tonight. 7.01, 7.02, 03, 04, 05, 06, and 07. All up for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Barga. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Quessenberry. All right. Madam Treasurer, I will turn it over to you.
All right. There are a number of items on tonight. The first are appropriation modifications. We have two new grants, the ESSER II grant, which is part of the CARES funding that we're receiving, and a Striving Readers Professional Development grant. We also have a couple of advances on tonight, both for those grants. We have an after-the-fact transaction. This is one that was coming out of one of our grants, an Expanding Opportunities grants, that the invoice kind of got lost in the shuffle of COVID and staffing changes, so I put that on for your approval. We have a handful of donations totaling $4,000, one for student incentives, one for the Jan Yates Scholarship, and another for the improvement of the outdoor learning space at French Run. I forgot to mention the April financial statements are on tonight for approval. And then the five-year forecast, which I'm going to give you a really brief overview. I know that Tricia Heater met with each of the board members, went over it in detail. I'll extend an offer to anyone in the audience who wants the more detailed version. I'm going to give the five-minute overview tonight. And then the state consent special needs resolution, which we'll also talk about in a little more detail after the forecast. We'll go with that resolution's about. So if there's no questions on the first five items, I'll ask Mr. Reed to pull up the PowerPoint for the quick overview of the forecast. You can go ahead and go to the next slide, Chris. All right, so in front of you, I put the forecast, and I'm really excited to present this forecast more so than usual because our financial situation has greatly improved from the fall forecast. As you know, I gave the fall forecast overview. We were expecting expenditures to exceed revenues by close to $4 million, and I was very concerned about what that meant for our financial future. Fortunately, many things happened that kind of went our way as far as revenues were concerned. Plus, we were able to offset some of our expenditures with the CARES Act funding, the various buckets that we got. So right now in this forecast, we're projecting about a $500,000 expenditure revenue gap. I will say we had our ESSER II funding, which was just on the appropriation modifications. And in our grant, we have applied to offset some additional general fund costs that qualify. I wasn't able to show them in this current forecast because that has not come back approved from the Department of Education. If that comes back approved, I'm hoping to get this very near zero or maybe into the positive with the adjustments I'm going to be able to make. Just a note, the forecast is a working document and it's based on a whole set of assumptions, historical data, current and projected economic conditions, as well as current and anticipated district programs. And I always make sure that I tell people this because the forecast does change frequently as some of these underlying assumptions change. As I noted in my second item there, while our expenditures did decrease slightly, our finances in the revenue side increased by $3.1 million. And I'll go over some of that as we go through this. And that's really what swung us back to having a closer to a break-even projection. the things that impacted our revenues, our real estate taxes came in way better than expected due to a triennial update that was higher than what we've had in a long time, plus some new construction in the district. The state did reinstate part of our cut that we sustained last year, which added about another $450,000 to our revenue. Workers' compensation gave out several big rebates this year to school districts. If I recall off the top of my head, I think those totaled close to $800,000 for us. So that really helped us. And again, I was able to move some COVID-related expenditures to the grants. A couple things to note is there's a lot of development going on in the city, and that will eventually positively impact our real estate taxes as that new construction comes on board and we start collecting those taxes. And as Mrs. Abram and Mr. Whitman noted, the new state funding formula is working its way through the legislature. At the end of my presentation, I have a graph showing what impact that might have on the district should that pass as it stands right now. If you can go to the next slide, Chris. So this is the forecast that shows the revenues versus expenditures. The green line are our revenues, the red line are expenditures. As you note, they're much closer than they were in the fall forecast. There still is a gap. Hopefully that gap will become more narrow as time goes on. But eventually, if that gap continues or even widens, that will eventually require us to place an operating levy on the ballot. That's a few years down the road, but I think it's always good to kind of look out in the future and kind of see what might be coming our way. The next slide, please, Chris. These are our cash balances. In the fall forecast, our cash balances took a pretty big hit, but right now in fiscal year 25, we still have a positive cash balance. Again, a little lower than what we'd like to see it down to 21 days, but still much better than the fall forecast. Our revenues, we get roughly half of our funding from the state, which makes the state's funding formula so important to us. The other big chunk comes from our property taxes combined with our income tax, and then the property tax allocation accounts for another 40% of our revenues, then 11% is all other revenues. So this is what I was talking about, that we got a pleasant surprise in our real estate taxes. The very last column out there, fiscal year 21, we went through triennial update, and that combined with new construction, we saw a 19% increase in our property values. In reappraisal just 3 years ago, that was 12%. We were very pleased by that. And then you'll notice the two times before that we went through update and reappraisal, we actually had losses in our value. So the 19% was unexpected, but very positive. And if the housing market continues as it has been, we'll have reappraisal in 3 more years, and hopefully that will also be very positive for us. This is our income tax. I actually took this graph back to 2008 when we had our last economic downturn. And at that economic downturn, we saw an 11% and then a 3% decline in our income taxes. This time, we saw a 4.5%. That was better than what we had originally projected. It's down. We still have families out there struggling with income and job loss, but it wasn't as bad as we had originally anticipated. So for the forecast, we're assuming that's going to stay flat for next year and then maybe start to slightly increase over the next few years. Again, so that contributed to our better financial position. This is our state funding. So in fiscal year 18, we had $38 million. We actually got a decent bump in 2019. And then fiscal year 20 is when we got the $850,000 cut, which we found out about in March of that year, and we were scrambling to try to plug that hole. We did get $465,000 of that reinstated this year. After this year, I left state funding fairly flat, except for casino revenue. It took a little bit of a hit, but then it bounced back better than what we thought it would. So hopefully that continues to increase a little bit to help us out. These are expenditures. Like most school districts, the bulk of our expenditures goes to our staffing because we're a very service-heavy industry, for lack of a better term. So about 71% go to salaries and benefits. The other 22% goes to purchase services. And then everything else makes up a very small part of our expenditures. So what I did with this graph, which I'm kind of excited about, I left on the revenue and expenditures from the original graph, but then I put in just the first 2 years, because we received simulations for just fiscal year 22 and 23. from the state of what the funding formula might look like. Now, keep in mind, that formula is going to be phased in over, I believe it was, one I saw was 8, another I saw was 6 years. I don't know where it stands right now. I only put in 2 years of the phase in. So this is very conservative. But look at the difference that that line makes just in getting the 2 years phased in. If that were to continue, we would push a lot closer to that expenditure line and really prolong the life of our current levy, which was passed way back in 2010. Chris, if you look at the next slide, look what it does to our cash balance. And again, that's only 2 years phased in. That gets us back up to 67 days out in 2025, which is a really decent cash balance, especially that far out in a forecast. So I guess the good news is we are in a much improved financial situation. We need to continue to pay attention to that, to do what we normally do with revenue or with our expenditures, making sure that every dollar we spend is spent in the right way and being very conservative and frugal and really spending on the things that matter for kids. But I'm very happy that we're much improved this year. And the ESSER money has helped us out, or the CARES Act money. When it's all said and done, when we get our third round, which we will find out more about that this summer, we'll have got about $20 million due to the pandemic to offset our cost and help get things back to normal in our district. If there's any questions about the forecast, I can take those now. If not, we can talk about the state consent special needs resolution.
Any questions about the five-year forecast? We've all spent a lot of time with Tricia and Tammy and looking that over. Always very thorough. I like to get good news, so
yes, so
appreciate that. Appreciate that very much. All right, so yes, if you want to move on to 7.07, talk about our special needs resolution.
So what this resolution does is, you know, Chris and Melvin and all of us have been talking for, gosh, the last year or so about the need for a building project in the district. In order to do that, the typical way that districts get money to do building projects is to issue bonds. State law dictates how you do bonds and how much debt a district can have. And so a district can only have X amount of dollars in debt. But you can petition the state to allow you to have additional debt outside what the Ohio Revised Code lets you do just in the Revised Code. So it's called a special needs resolution or a state consent resolution. So what we're saying is we have a special need to issue bonds, to issue debt, and we're asking the state to give us consent. So this resolution is just simply us going to the state and saying, can we issue up to $85 million in bonds? Now, we don't have to issue that much, but that's the maximum that we can go and still be eligible to issue any kind of debt. So all this resolution is doing is going off to the state and saying, can we issue debt in this amount? We have not decided on the structure, how much would be bond, how much would be a PI levy, how much ESSER fund we could use yet. I mean, we've had several meetings about that. But this resolution isn't tying our hands in any way except saying, can we issue the max amount of debt that we're allowed to under law with your consent?
All right, great. Sort of a first step as
it's
we explore
step,
this
yes.
Further,
yes,
knowing the need that we have. Yeah.
Yeah. To issue bonds in Ohio, there's a whole series of steps that you have to go through, and this is the first one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions for Treasurer Miller? Seeing none, or were there any other questions about any of the other previous items that she discussed?
I did have one question about the special needs resolution. So the mm-hmm. number in there is 85 million. And what was, and how much is that in excess of what we would ordinarily be allowed to ask for?
In state law, you can issue between 4% and 9%, but you can go up to 12% if you petition the state for the special consent. So we will be pushing really close to that 12%. I think we're like 11.9%. So
okay.
There's a calculation that you have to do based on historical and projected property values. So our recent triennial update is what really helped us be able to do that because it came in so high. So we use Bricker and Eckler as our bond council. They're probably the premier bond council in the state, and they've walked through the whole calculation and prepared that for us. And then they've written out and prepared this resolution also.
All right, thank you.
And to clarify this resolution and that $85 million, it's not to exceed it, that.
Yes.
So we could be using up to that amount, mm-hmm. but not necessarily.
Correct.
But we're just taking that first step. All right. Seeing no more questions, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motions pass. All right, moving on to personnel, which is a large section. Again, always true this time of the year. And up for action tonight, we have 8.01, 8.02, 8.03, 8.04, and 8.05. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
So moved.
Second by Ms. Questenberry. I'm going to turn it over to you, Superintendent Brown.
Thank you. In this section, you will see numbers of personnel items for next school year. As I mentioned earlier, and as you also mentioned, Ms. Dunlap, we have a number of administrators who are going off to other roles in other districts, and we're thankful for them and their service here and want to give them an opportunity to be successful in their careers in that regard. You'll also see some evidence of our redesign of our high school model so that we can have increased alignment, connectivity, equity, and consistency across our high school. You'll see evidence of that throughout. And I also wanted to make an important note of three individuals who have given their time and service to this district: Rose Berkey, Maria Moss, and the one name I really don't want to say in this venue, Tammy Miller. Thank you so much for the service you've given to our district. Just so for everyone listening, Tammy's not leaving until December. I need to note that. But we're excited about
that. We haven't voted yet.
That's true. That's true. We're excited about the work that they've done, but also excited for their opportunity to retire and enjoy a life that's a little less crazy as it's been this current year. So I wanted to make sure we gave them that credit and due as we close out this section.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions or comments about this section? I think one thing that's so positive, and Mr. Reed, you know, we kind of talked about this, the number of student workers that will be back at our schools over the summer. And again, that was exciting to see since we missed that last summer. Again, some of that return to normalcy. And we were talking about these kids are excited to do this work together. And my son spent last summer working and doing landscaping with a friend. And I'll tell you what, when you have a friend along with you, sometimes it makes that work a lot more enjoyable. I just want to say also thank you, Tammy, for all your years of service. You know, as evidenced when we hear the five-year forecast tonight, how many years we've been off the ballot. And that's good, prudent spending, but it's looking at our kids and our education and our community and investing where we need to invest, and I appreciate that very much. And the fact that, again, I always say this, that you can explain this, you know, to those who, this is in their bailiwick, this is what they do. Finances are not mine, and I always appreciate you being able to explain things so they're very understandable. And we're going to miss you, but we're very, very happy for you.
Thank you.
Because we know you'll go on to do a lot of great things. Great things that are in your bucket list and maybe not necessarily on an agenda. All right. If there are no further questions or comments, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion passes. I think begrudgingly a bit. Get to where I need to be on my agenda. All right, so moving on to curriculum and programs. Up for action tonight, we have 9.01 and 9.02. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Abram. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Quisenberry. Superintendent Brown.
9.01 is our yearly membership from the Ohio High School Athletic Association to go in place in August. We do that each year. And 9.02 is a contract for our arrangement with our partner, Battelle for Kids, who provide us tons of support and work in reference to what we've done with a portrait of a graduate, what we will be doing with a portrait of an educator, our membership in connection to Ed Leader 21, our SOAR team, SOAR network teamwork, and work on performance assessments, which we are extremely excited about. So this contract takes care of that.
Great. We hear about Battelle and a lot of the things that we do. Any questions, anyone?
We've talked a lot about portrait of a graduate, but portrait of an educator is one that's a little new for me.
That's because it hasn't started yet. That's the work we'll be doing starting this summer and into the fall, actually crafting what the ideal role of what a Reynoldsburg educator looks like. What are those tenets? What are those important pieces that make up that particular an individual in that regard? And that will also be aligned with our portrait of a graduate.
Okay, thank you.
And this is in regards to the grant that Ms. Wilson applied for and received.
Oh, I remember now.
Okay.
All right, sounds great. I love the work. All right, seeing no more questions or comments, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mrs. Quisenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Varga?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motions pass. Moving on to student services, item 10.01 is up for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Abram. Superintendent Brown?
This is a contract for one student with special needs, and one of our partners will provide services for that student.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any questions about that? All right, seeing none, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Varga?
Aye.
Mrs. Quisenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving on to business and operations. First, we have up for information, and we'll start with that, and then I think we'll move on to the rest. 11.01, results of electric RFP. I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Reed to give us a little bit of an update.
Sure. So I'm on a committee that handles the procurement for the energy and gas for 151 school districts. I am pleased to announce that our current price per kilowatt hour for generation of electric is 3.238 cents. Starting July of 2022, we'll be paying 3.221 cents per kilowatt hour for 3 years. So very excited about that.
Can you just briefly explain a little bit about the process? I mean,
well, electric is a very interesting beast. Generation is just one cost. Another cost is the actual transmission of that. So you're literally paying for the power lines. We all do in our own residential lives, our business lives, and all those things. And the last is capacity. Before we did our HVAC program, our capacity was in the worst five of the state. Capacity means how well you handle your energy or how well you use your energy. We are now in the top five in the state in regards to school districts, the way we handle our capacity. We can't pay much less. So.
That's wonderful. Great news. Again, that was a wonderful investment, a very prudent investment for us, particularly before the pandemic, which even realize how beneficial that would be as well. All right. Any questions for Mr. Reed concerning 11.01? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Reed. We always like to get good news. Then we will move on to 11.02, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, and 08, which are all up for action. Do I have a motion? Moved by Ms. Quisenberry. Do I have a second? Second by Mr. Varga. All right, Mr. Reed, I'll hand that back to you.
11.02, the Columbus State MOU. This is a refresh of a very old memorandum. This is for the facility usage and rental. It is adjusted as we are utilizing some classrooms in the Columbus State space for preschool for next year. very excited about that. I'm very thankful that Columbus State was very able to work with us on that. So very excited for that. 11.03, the Master Service Agreement with Meta Solutions. That is our annual fiscal, PowerSchool, and EMIS support. We have this every year. It actually is typically in April, but a little late getting it, so it's in May. We're still good. 11.04 is the approval of the property, fleet, and liability insurance. Again, that's an annual thing. We saw a slight increase in our fees, but that was expected. Actually more palatable than I thought it would be. 11.05 is the approval of the contract with ABM for our custodial services. ABM has been servicing us for 5 years in regards to our nighttime custodians. They also provide our daytime substitutes. So we rebid that, and they were awarded the competitive bid. And 11.06, resolution to or for PowerSchool Suite Software License Group. This actually is granting the superintendent or the superintendent designee, which would be me, the ability to sign the contract. It is not through legal yet, but the dollar amount is not changing. Bricker is working with, Bricker and Eckler is working with the PowerSchool attorneys to iron out a couple issues. They have provided this resolution for us. The 11.707 payment in lieu is our traditional payment to families that we are not transporting their kids. 11.08, a surplus item is a Zenith TV. Blast from the past.
All right, any questions for Mr. Reed, Mr. Barger?
You know, Mr. Reed, you've gotten very good at these surplus items that I haven't had to ask you a question on them for some time, but this one I do. Not just because it's so archaic. Have you given the robotics team the opportunity to go through it and see if there's anything useful in it?
I have not, but I will.
Because I think for these, some of our electronics, especially the ones that might have useful components, either robotics or any of our STEM labs or something like that might be a useful alternative to just trying to, essentially it's going to be scrapped because no one's going to be interested in
it. Sure.
So, thank you.
That reminds me of, I think it was about 2 years ago when I went up to Summit Elementary and they had an art show. Were you thinking the same thing? Yeah, and they had these really great robots that they made, and they were made out of CDs because these kids are like, what's this? You know, and all sorts of other things that were plucked out of computers and televisions and monitors and things. And yeah, so they weren't necessarily working components, but they made some wonderful and very creative robots by the children there. Yeah, good idea. Mr. Whitman, did you have a question?
A couple, but yes, great idea, Board Member Barger. A couple of the items here I've been interested in hearing about in advance of the meeting. So one I want to highlight is the annual adjustment with the space agreement with Columbus State. So as I understand it, one of the adjustments we need to make this year is because some or all of the preschool classes are moving to the Livingston campus, correct?
That would be all of them.
All of them. Okay. So some parents out there may recall, a few years ago when we had to cram them into the Summit High School building. It hasn't been a great fit. It's probably not going to be that great a fit here either, but
Can I comment? I actually think it's going to be a very good fit.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The staff is very excited. Most notably, the courtyard that's going to be their little playground. They're very excited about that.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay. Well, I'm glad.
A fully
to hear
enclosed
that.
Playground. So okay. Very excited about that.
I would add is if we discussed the program will also align with Columbus State's early childhood program. We'll have kids in that pipeline who will actually get some experiential opportunities.
I had forgotten about that particular connection, so thank you for the reminder. So this is good. I'm glad it's not simply something we were forced to do out of necessity. Okay, the other one is the PowerSchool Suite software. So I was kind of excited to hear about that. Madam Treasurer, one of the things you stuck around for just this this past year was to get the new accounting software mm-hmm. moved over. imagine that that's going to handshake with this PowerSchool suite, or?
Yes. Yeah. So the PowerSchool suite is an HR software that is also, and our financial software is now our PowerSchool product, and these two actually talk to each other. Right now, payroll and HR are very siloed. We have to like piecemeal different programs. So this is going to allow us, and it's actually Jamie who has to do the heavy lift on this one. He'll be running point on it. But eventually, HR and payroll will like be under one umbrella, and we'll have a lot more efficiency than what we currently have. So I'm personally very excited about it. I believe Jamie's very excited, but she's got a year of some really heavy lifting and hard work ahead of her. So, but it's a great thing. It's going to be great when this is all done and implemented.
Yeah, I mean, just dealing with password managers, I've discovered that when they don't sync up from one device to the other, that just creates hours of extra work.
Yes.
And know that in our district, it's been just multiplied so much. So I'm excited to hear about that. So thank you.
All right, I'm glad you asked about that because I wanted to ask that about that as well. Thank you. And I just want to comment that sometimes even though we do things out of necessity, we're forced into necessity, I think about the pandemic, we emerge on the other side sometimes with some great benefits and some new discoveries. So, all right.
I do have a question, if you don't mind.
Ms. Presbury?
Mr. Reed, on the 11.07, is that for all students, special ed students? What does this transportation go towards?
Well, this is actually the payment to the family that we will not be transporting.
Okay. So we're just talking one family.
It's a list of families.
It's a list of families.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, so it's just, it encompasses all students, not just necessarily special ed students.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Thank you.
As I understand it, sometimes it's difficult to make this transportation, right? And so in all districts, I remember reporting on this as well, we pay the parents in lieu of.
Correct.
All right. Seeing no more questions, Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motions pass. All right. Moving on to item 12.01, we have an executive session for A2. A4, and A7, employment, discipline, and compensation. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Questenberry, second by Ms. Abram. Madam Treasurer, will you please call the roll?
Mrs. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Abram?
Aye.
Mr. Barga?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye. Motion passes. And for the audience, when we do return, I do not anticipate any further action except to adjourn the meeting.